Penguin Random House Audio presents The Kew Gardens Girls by Posy Lovell. Read for you by Elizabeth Nolden. Prologue. Kew, 1913. The bells seemed louder than usual this evening, Reverend Miller thought, as he walked round the side of St. Anne's Church. Perhaps the bell ringers were feeling particularly energetic. He paused for a while, listening to the tuneful clanging with pleasure. He couldn't hear anything else but the bells, he noted. No shouts from the men working on the nearby river, no sound from the road or from the pub across the way. Just the bells. He nodded in satisfaction and continued on his twilight walk round the churchyard. Inside the bell tower, the noise was deafening as the bell ringers threw themselves into their practice, much to the delight of Ginny Walker, who was responsible for the loudest clanging. She pulled hard on the rope, feeling her shoulder muscles cry out in protest, but she didn't stop. She knew it was important to keep going, louder and louder. Glancing down, she saw the little silver hammer brooch she wore pinned to her lapel, the symbol that showed she was a suffragette, and she would do anything to further the cause. She pulled on the rope once more, grunting with the exertion. She would do anything. The sound of the chiming bells rolled across the green, drowning out the noise made by three women who were standing by the wall.
"Go on, Olive," one of them hissed. "Hitch your skirt up if it's getting in the way."
With a grin, the woman hiked up her long dress round her waist and tucked it into her bloomers.
"Better? Go on," the other one said again. "Look, she's up there already."
Above them, perched at the top of the wall, was another woman, younger than Olive and her friend Lillian. She'd scaled the barrier without hesitation and was now peering down over the other side.
"It's all quiet," she said. "Follow me."
There was a soft thud as she threw herself down from the wall and disappeared from view. Olive and Lillian glanced at each other and then, with considerably less dexterity than their younger friend, began scaling the wall themselves. Once they were on the other side, the young woman put her fingers to her lips.
"Sound travels strange inside Kew Gardens," she said under her breath. "Whispers carry through the trees and the bells won't cover everything. No more talking."
The women all nodded at one another, and after picking up the bags they'd thrown over the wall ahead of them, they silently crept through the trees toward the tea pavilion.
"Over there," the young woman said as they came to a clearing.
The building loomed up in front of them out of the gloom.
"That's the tea pavilion."
She clutched Lillian's arm.
"Just the pavilion, right?" she said. "Because what you did to the orchid house the other day, ruining all those plants, that wasn't right. They're living things, not bricks and mortar."
"Just the pavilion," Lillian agreed. As one, the women walked quietly to the front of the pavilion. Lillian pinned a note on the wall, reading, "Votes for Women," and Olive pulled a pack of fabric from her bag, pads soaked in paraffin. She tucked a couple into the wooden slats by the door and another two by the steps. She doused the wooden slats by the door and threw it onto the pads by the steps. The smell rose up, making their nostrils tingle.
"Ready?" said Lillian.
Olive nodded, but the younger woman looked unsure.
"Is this the only way?" she asked. "Really?"
"Deeds, not words," said Lillian. She struck a match and with a flourish threw it onto the steps behind the younger woman. Immediately, the rickety wooden structure burst into flames, higher and more powerful than any of them had expected.
"Oh!"
the young woman gasped in pain as the fire caught the wooden stair railing next to where she stood and licked her arm with its sharp orange tongue.
"Get back!" Lillian cried.
She pulled the teenager away from the flames and yanked her back toward the path where Olive was already standing.
"It's too much," the young woman said, her face lit with the glow from the fire. "It's too much. This is wrong."
But Olive and Lillian simply shook their heads.
We need them to pay attention, Olive said. Perhaps this will help.
I hope so, said the youngster. I really hope you're right.
A noise from the bushes made them freeze.
What was that? Lillian breathed.
They all listened, senses on high alert.
Was it footsteps?
Keeper, said the teenager. We need to go. She pulled Olive's arm.
This way, she said. I know a way out. Follow me.
She vanished into the shadows, and with the sound of running footsteps echoing through the darkness, Olive and Lillian followed. Chapter 1 Q, June 1915.
I'm really not sure about this,
said Douglas Macmillan, as he slowly walked down the line of potential new recruits.
Not sure about this at all.
He shook his head, pausing in his pacing.
What do you think, Jim?
His assistant, a younger man with a mop of dark hair and kind eyes, gave his boss an amused glance.
I think you should give them a chance, Mac, he said.
We've lost more than half our gardeners already, and there are bound to be more that join up.
We need them,
he sighed.
We had this conversation when we put the ad in the Times, Mac. You agreed. We're lucky so many have turned up.
Mac huffed in disapproval.
I'm just not sure they're up to the job, he muttered. Bunch of namby-pamby lady poets and maiden aunts.
In the line, two of the recruits exchanged a look of solidarity. They were used to being underestimated by men, before standing to attention again as Mac continued his inspection. He paused by one of the women, tall and elegant, though a closer look would reveal her skirt had been mended many times and her coat was faded.
What's your name? He barked.
The woman winced just a little at his sharp tone, then straightened up and looked him straight in the eye.
Louisa Taylor, she said.
And you want to be a horticulturalist, do you? Fancy yourself as a gardener?
I'm already a gardener, but I'd like to work here, yes.
Mac huffed again.
Gardenery? What do you grow?
Vegetables, mostly, at the moment, but flowers, too. I only have window boxes because my flat is very small.
Mac nodded, and the woman continued.
I grew up in Kent, she said, on a hops farm. I understand plants.
Hops?
Mac's gruff Scottish voice sounded grudgingly impressed.
Not easy.
No, sir.
Behind him, Jim grinned again.
He'll come round eventually, he said in a low voice to the youngest woman in the line. Don't worry.
She smiled at him.
Promise?
She said quietly.
Promise.
A kerfuffle at the other end of the line made them both look up. A disheveled young man joined the group. His cap was askew, one trouser leg was half tucked into his sock, and he was breathing heavily.
Sorry I'm late, he panted. Went to the wrong gate, and then it was difficult finding somewhere to lock up my bicycle.
Mac, looking relieved to see another male face, left his interrogation of Louisa Taylor and turned his attention to the man.
What's your name?
Bernard, he said, still out of breath. Bernie York.
Well, Bernard, Bernie York, said Mac. Do you have any horticultural experience?
Bernie chuckled. Good heavens, no, he said. None whatsoever, but I'm a fast learner and I'm not frightened of hard work.
Good, said Mac. You're in. Go and give Jim your details.
The two women exchanged another glance, and the younger woman, the one who'd been talking to Jim, raised an eyebrow.
Should have said your name was Lewis, not Louisa, she said quietly.
Louisa stifled a laugh. She already liked this rather wild-looking girl beside her, and hoped they'd both be chosen to work at Kew.
Louisa,
Mac said, making her jump.
Yes, sir?
Not one of those suffragettes, are you?
Louisa looked straight at him.
Absolutely not, sir.
Good, said Mac. They burned the tea pavilion, you know, and destroyed the orchid house. Terrible business.
I heard, Louisa said.
Behind her back, she curled her fingers around the little silver hammer brooch she wore, and which she'd removed just before Mac...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?